and welcome to The Assembly Line, Dev Bytes, an NES homebrew podcast. I'm your host, Kevin from Kahan Games, and today we have a special treat for you. We have the legend, Bo Holland, who was, and still is, my co-host here on The Assembly Line, but ever since he had a kid, he's been focusing on being a father, so haven't had any time to do episodes with the two of us, but I've continued doing it this way. But I reached out to him and said, hey, you know, I know you don't have time to do full episodes, but do you think you have an hour or so to sit down with me and talk about things? And he was gracious enough to oblige. So reunited, and it feels so good. I let Bo do most of the talking because I know how much you all love his voice. I love it too. Can't get enough. So sit back and enjoy my conversation with Mr. Bo Holland. All right, we're here with Bo Holland. You might know him from such podcasts as The Assembly Line and such games as Spookatron and Swords and Runes. Bo, you there?
Hello, Kevin.
I had to do a little throwback to how we used to bring other people on the podcast.
I know, and I think I always added the response so they sounded a little better than I just did, but whatever.
We'll touch it up in post, don't worry. So I guess we'll just start with how you been. I mean, I guess most people, you know, people follow you on Twitter, but you've sort of lived this entire life since we've stopped doing our episodes together. So what you been up to?
Oh, we never stopped doing them. We just haven't done one in a while.
That's fair.
That's how I phrase it in my head. I fully plan to get back to all the hopes and dreams and goals I had for myself, but I'm a dad now, so
congrats.
That is most all of my time, all day, every day.
And you love every second of it.
I do. It's extremely wonderful. I never understood quite what that meant, where you will have no time to yourself. I'm sort of getting it now.
Exaggerating, huh?
I just thought people just hated their kids, and it's like, no, they just didn't phrase it correctly, and I end up in situations where I don't phrase it correctly, and I'm like, people probably think I hate doing this, but I stay home with her, you know, I watch her all day, and so that's, like, I get that sort of extra level of, I'm not phrasing this correctly either, but primary caregiver, I think that's the...
Yeah.
Stay-at-home dad, but, so, like, that is my, like, that's my job, and that's what I pour myself into, and so I try not to look at the things I'm missing and just try to focus on, you know, whatever she needs. But it's been a year, and she is to that point where she can hurt herself really easily on everything. So,
oof.
Yeah, the job has gotten a lot more intense the last 2 months.
So that's even more stress on your life, trying to keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, she's good, though. She's great. Like, she's just a good kid. I don't know what bad kid looks like, but I don't think she's one of them. Maybe.
Well, what do they call it? The terrible twos, right? I guess that's coming up.
Yeah, somebody said it was really the threes are worse, but
we'll find out. That was Brian, but he says that about every age.
Yeah. If there's another episode or a game that I come out with in the next like year, you'll have understood that I have regained some time and sanity and can function again. And if not, you know, send some warm thoughts mentally. Don't do it on Twitter because I won't check it.
Right. All right, well, let's get to ye olde interview.
Okay,
what do you say?
Here's the thing. You said you wanted to do this like spin-off thing, these dev bites you're calling them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really know what you do on this because I haven't listened to one.
And that's what's most exciting to me. You have no idea what's coming.
I've got no idea. Oh, yeah. Do you take me where you're going to?
All right. So let's go back to old youngster Bo. Do you remember your first video game related memory?
Oh, we're going like way, way back. Yeah. I mean, not like probably the very first, but there's definitely some early stuff. And a babysitter named Alexis in a parish... Parsonage, that's what they call them. parsonage basement because her husband was a pastor. I cheated on her, but whatever. That came later. The point here was we were in their basement playing Super Mario Brothers 2. And that is the one for me that just, it sticks in my mind. We'd play that thing every day. Never really got very far. And we started learning some secrets. We would put the cartridge in. It would be all glitchy and we would just play it that way because it was neat. Like, that was... Yeah, we made up names for characters and stuff because they looked like they were wearing suits and like...
What do you mean it was glitchy? Like there was dust on the pin connector and it was just coming through not correct?
Must have been, yeah. Like, Yeah, I mean, that was it. Like, you know, I mean, nowadays with emulation and all these nice new parts that we all use when we make our homebrew games, which is always good. You don't see it, but like... It used to just be glitches on stuff, and you can play a lot of games that way.
That's
at least for a while.
So at what point did you think you would like to make video games?
Let's go like 95, which would have been fifth grade for me. And we had a rainy day. Or I don't think it was a snow day. I think it was just a rainy day during the summer. Which is vastly different time of year. But we were playing a lot of Secret of Mana, a lot of Mega Man X, stuff like that. And the neighbors came over and we were just entertaining ourselves. I was like, well, let's design a game. And so we sat there with, you know, pencils and drew stuff out. I still have the sheet and everything. And like,
you still do to this day?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's down in the basement. I'm visiting my mom right now so that she can get some granddaughter time. And it's right downstairs. It's a wonderful thing. We drew like items and things that they would find. There's a spike helmet on there because the character was going to wear a spiked helmet. Of course, you know, we weren't terribly creative. So it was always like, this will be a Mega Man game and Mega Man's going to wear a spiked helmet from Secret of Mana. Like, it was very
like fan fiction.
Very fan fiction, yeah. And then if you like fast forward to the end of high school, when I finally got a computer of my own, I didn't grow up with a computer of basically any kind. I just like sneak time on my grandpa's computer on Friday nights when they would go out to dinner, and I never could figure anything out. But, like, the end of high school, I discovered RPG Maker, and it was suddenly like, oh, this is actually possible to do. And
nice.
Yeah, played with that for about a decade, and then I'm going to let you ask more questions and not tell you long stories.
We like long stories, though.
I know, but I feel like I've gone over all this, haven't I?
Probably, but it's nice to have it in one concise location.
Okay.
So you messed with RPG Maker for a little while. You said a decade?
Yeah.
Did you finish any games with that or just sort of putting ideas together, seeing what you could do and then switching to something else?
So let's see. That would have been like 03, 04. Finished in high school. Started dating a girl that had the internet and I could like download things. Like, I would download these the files of like the characters. I still have the floppy disks that have them because, you know, 2.5 megabytes. And
heck yeah.
So then I went off to college and still playing around with RPG Maker. Not a lot. Like, I also discovered like fan translations that year. So that sort of took over. Plus, you know, decent grades. sort of. I mean, enough.
you passed.
Yeah. Well, I had that one B that I regret, but that was due to Final Fantasy. Anyways, so then sophomore year rolls around and I'm taking a Old Testament class because I was a Bible major, and I don't know if it really shows now. but we had to do a creative project, and for my creative project I decided I was going to make an RPG Maker game, and I did one of the sections in the Book of Judges, and I got you know, like an A+ on it because he was just like, what? And I was like, yeah, it's all Final Fantasy IV characters walking around Final Fantasy IV world, but it had all the narrative from Judges. It had the events, cut scenes, battles. I mean, you don't really fight anything in judges for the most part. But
so were all the assets available online to just download and insert into RPG Maker? Like, how did you get all that?
Yeah. I mean, that's what I had started polling the year or two before. Like, with anything, you can get lost in research and finding the right filler stuff. And I've always sort of had this problem. So I would spend most of my time downloading stuff, not actually making anything. But
right.
This class was a good chance to actually make something and do it pretty well. Like, he made me play it in front of the class and everything. And I don't know what other people thought, but it did well.
So you were able to essentially make full games in RPG Maker. What drew you to actual programming?
You can make full things in RPG Maker, but there's also tons of limitations. And there's tons of limitations, but also a game creation tool like that drops you at the doorstep of the hard part. Like, here's everything, go make a game. And that is extremely overwhelming, especially when you start looking around at what other people have done, what you'd like to do. And all of a sudden, you even if you had all the assets loaded up and you just had to start dragging and dropping, well, you still have to figure out how to, like, make a game.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to do that for you. There's no tool for that. It's easy to get lost. Like, you start planning, you lose interest. Like, the hard part is the first step, as opposed to with programming, I found. So after messing with it for a decade or so, I realized I hadn't really ever made anything except for these one or two small, like, projects. Couldn't really do... Well, I started to plan out this space one, and I'd always buy a new notebook every time I went to go make a new game idea. It's writing it down. I'd been writing down ideas for, I don't know, 8 years probably at that point. So I've got quite a few notebooks full of game ideas. And not all of them were RPG Maker. Some of them were, like, I tried to learn programming once, but again, like, the first step in a book about game dev is go learn all of C++. And you're like, well, that's, like, kind of like a hard place to start. And all this ties into the Nerdy Knights eventually. But in between there, I started planning out the space RPG, and I wanted to do top-down sections and battles, and then also I was like, oh, it'd be cool to have, like, a flying ship thing in there. Like, okay, RPG Maker doesn't do that. Probably not going to work. Like, maybe I need to, like, really rethink this. And that was the time I would have been 10 years ago. What month is it? November?
Yeah.
So, like, 10 years and 2 months ago, I was subbing in a high school, and I was using all my free time, my prep periods, whatever, when the kids were doing whatever I was planning. I was building games on paper. And I was like, this needs to be it. Like, and this is, like, several months after I started the space idea. I then had, you know, more ideas and whatnot. It was like, this is it. Like, if I'm not going to actually make a game, I need to quit dreaming of this every year. Getting all excited, you know, buying notebooks, writing down ideas, developing things, then losing interest and not doing anything with it. Like, this sort of, it wasn't going anywhere. It's like, you know, always wanting to write that book or that novel that you never get around to, but it's always sort of there. Like, this, I wanted to make a game. And that led then to realizing that RPG Maker really wasn't, It was starting me at the hard part, and it was limiting whatever I wanted to do. And it was just way too open at the same time. Like, it was limiting, but also super open. You could do, you know, a lot with it. And so I had read Racing the Beam about the 2600. And that had a section on homebrewing in it. And I was like, oh, you know, that'd be sort of interesting. Like, people actually make games for old consoles. But I've played the 2600 once at that point.
what was your impression?
Not good. I mean, because I grew up with the NES, and then I went over to this old lady at church.
Step backwards.
Yeah, we went over to this old lady at church's basement, and we're playing it down there. I'm going, this isn't fun. It was Pitfall. And it's just like, no, I'm good. But I'm reading this book and it's very fascinating with like the way that people approached and like looked at programming for an old system. And so I started looking around at maybe that might be something to do. And the Super Nintendo was like, is my favorite system. But there wasn't a lot there. The NES had a ton going for it, but you know, it's a little, you know, it's a lot more constraints. And the Genesis like had a lot going for it, but not a great community, and not like quality wise, but just there wasn't like quantity. There wasn't a lot of activity.
Right.
And the games that were coming out for it weren't that interesting. And so when I saw that people were doing stuff for the NES, it was, you know, Nintendo Age and NES Dev, and they were very active, like just tons of stuff. This guy named Kevin Hanley was making, you know, churning out games. Battle Kid was out. The Ape at Xmas series. Like, there was a lot happening with the NES scene, and the community was super friendly. You'd go on the forum, on Nintendo Age, the forum, and, well, because I had bad experiences over on NES Dev.
Yeah, that's why I'm laughing. I did.
Yeah, I know. We know it goes south at some point here. Nintendo Age was so inviting, and I just like, I mean, you can find my first post somewhere. It's this like really sprawling, this kid's finishing grad school, like way too much thought into like a friendly forum post. And
little Billy Mumphrey's wide-eyed.
And now I can't write to save my life. But back then it was good stuff.
So how hard was it for you to get going programming on the NES?
Super easy.
Really?
You open... Well, no, I mean, let's take it in context here. it depends what you want to do. But, like, it was super easy to... And I've run into this a lot with people over the years. Like, they're like, how do I get started? What do I do? And I'm like, you just literally download Notepad, which is already on your computer, so you don't have to download it. You just need to download this thing that Brian has, NESASM, and his tutorial, and you can be building something within like a night. And it was daunting. It took, you know, probably several days to set that up and be like, oh, I double click this. I'd never used a command line before. Like, sure. That was weird. I've never altered a text file. At some point I was like, oh my goodness, like games are just a bunch of text files. That's interesting. And within, you know, a few hours, you're making some changes. And I probably spent, I don't know, 40 to 60 hours a week for the first 3 months. Like, that's all I did. And, you know, I had a wife at the time. I had...
You don't anymore?
No, I do. She's still around. But, like, I didn't have, like, a super, like, carefree, easy life. Well, no, it was. Now that I have a kid, everything was easy. But, I was substitute teaching, so I was working most days. But I just like really got into it. It was super fascinating, and I just dumped all my time into it. And then I started asking people questions. But it was really gratifying. Unlike the books that said you had to go learn all of C++ before you wrote one line of code, like Ryan's Nerdy Nights, you're doing stuff immediately. Change this number. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, stuff happens. Okay, let's build on that. And it's so intuitive, like inductive. You're just going along, doing stuff, making changes. And I would get to things and sort of scratch my head because he leaves a bunch of gaps. It's like collisions aren't in there. I'm like, well, if this thing is here, it needs to push back. And I would ask around and be like, that's exactly what you do. You push back against them. Like, oh, like, awesome. Like, I'm able to figure this out as I go. And, so it was, I found it very easy to get into. Within 3 months, I'd really finished the Nerdy Nights, thanks to your help, MRN's help, and public help from, you know, various people. And within 3 months, I think I'd started on my port of Adventure for the 2600, a game which I had never really played, but I wanted to make a Zelda game as my first game, and so that seemed like an easy way to kind of get into it, which was a mistake, but you know, live and
learn. those are really magical times. Like, I remember the forums being so active, you know, lots of people were asking questions. Lots of people were contributing to answers. It was just sort of a full community, just happiness, and things were getting done. And I don't know, I feel like that was probably when things started progressing in the scene the quickest.
Yeah, a lot of us were getting, so that would have been 2013 when I don't think I posted on, I lurked for 3 or 4 months, and then Dane wouldn't let you access the eZine unless you had an account. So I finally had to make an account. And and through this, I'd started actually looking at Atari 2600 stuff, because, you know, you go from RPG Maker and like modern dev, then you're like, I'm going to go down to NES. And you're like, what if I go down further? Like, what if that, wouldn't that just be easier? And turns out it's not. But the ideas like behind 2600 games and early arcade games are a lot simpler than like full blown Dragon Warriors and Final Fantasies.
Oh yeah.
Or Zeldas. So I was playing this Activision collection on PC. It was a disc I'd found at a thrift store, and my wife, she does not play games, but she played one game growing up, and it was called Mega Mania on the 2600, and it was on there. And through that disc, I started playing other games, and I found a game called Hero, Helicopter Emergency Rescue Operation, something like that. And I was just like blown away by it. I was like, this, what if somebody put this on the NES? So you'll actually find my username for the first year or two is NES Hero, because I wanted to port Hero. And somebody else I knew was porting all these 2600 games like E.T. and whatever else to the NES. I was like, I'll do Hero. That'll be, you know, that'll be a good learning experience. And I was actually playing it last night on the Master System going, I still need to do this project. But anyways, I forget what you ask now.
Nothing. We're just talking. So you essentially chose the NES because you could do more with it than the Atari 2600, and it was less intimidating and had a more active community than the Super Nintendo, which was your first choice.
Which still doesn't have a community. It was just so inviting. Like, you'd look at the forums, you could see people getting positive responses. Like, and I mentioned negative responses a bit ago, but like the only negative responses I saw in Nintendo Age were somebody behaves like a fool and somebody else says something, which is actually positive. And I got a few comments, like when I would privately ask people like, hey, this is the type of game I want to make. They'd be like, you need to do this type of game first, or you need to not think so big. And like, they were just like, they'd try to scale me back. And I was like, nah, we're not going to do that. I still don't do that.
A guy that knows what he wants. I like it.
Well, you know, that's the thing. I came into this not wanting to make a game. I want to make some very specific games. And those have obviously changed as I've learned more and, you know, had 10 years of pretty much active development time. Like, I have no interest in making, oh, let's do Pong. Let's do Tetris. Let's do, I guess I've made both of those now. But, you know, like, I want to make something in particular. Okay, go on.
So growing up, you and your friends are writing down all these game ideas, and, you know, as you're going through RPG Maker, you're putting ideas down. Like, how, after you start getting into NES, like, how do you decide what projects you actually want to work on?
Golly, this is still something I struggle with. You know, at first it was just, it was Pong, you have to do it because it's in the Nerdy Knights, so you do that. And then I chose Adventure because it was like a little Zelda. And I was sketching while at work this grand Zelda-like called Project SLR, which I'm not going to tell you what it means because Kevin's never been able to figure it out.
Dang it!
And I'm not going to ruin that for him now. So he'll have to go through my notes when I'm dead. I was
hoping to get that info during this interview.
So I did that, and I built it very like piecemeal. Like, I need a map that I can walk around. I need a character that can swing a weapon. I need an enemy that affects player health. Like, I just built it piece by piece and didn't really get very far. I kept at it for a year or two. I probably worked on that like every day, something different. Oh, wow. And you know, there's not like a ton to show, but you can get lost in code so easy and spend all your time like perfecting something or learning stuff. And I would pick up little projects along the way. Like I have one for scrolling dialogue. Like I wanted the dialogue box to pop up and pop down. And so like I would do little detours for my main project and just do that, or just do like, what would it look like if I covered up sprites when a character walks behind a wall, like that type of thing. I test little things. And
thank you for showing me how to do that, by the way.
Yeah, it's such a cool trick. I love it. I don't remember if I sent you like the single ROM that just has that feature or not, or if I just described it, but
no, I
somewhere
think
out there. That was sort of hitting a point where it was hard. It was hard being on the forums because everybody was, you know, releasing stuff. They were talking about stuff they're working on, but I didn't want to fall into the trap of like talking about something and then having people ask about it.
Yep.
And so for the longest time, I didn't really mention, I still don't really talk about what I'm doing for that reason. I never show pictures. There's not much. And oh man, you're making me like dig here.
It's what we do.
I got to get the order of projects right. I don't remember. I'll think of it at some point in the next day or two. But at some point, I started work on an Oregon Trail-like game called Family Vacation.
Oh, yeah.
And part of the reason was because I didn't really understand sprites. Like, it took probably two or three more years before it finally clicked, like, how sprites work, which now it's like, I wish somebody would have taken the 10 minutes to just tell me how they work. But you know, sometimes you don't want to ask a question that's so dumb, man, you really probably should, or you ask the question, but nobody understands quite what you're talking about. Like, they're like, oh, you don't understand that? Like a computer's a loop. And you're like, yeah, maybe it's a loop.
Yeah. It's hard to know what people know and don't know. And terminology, I think, is really hard. Cause so many people refer to things in different ways.
Yeah, and I had some bad experiences over on NestDev of really getting shut down with the questions I asked and asking for help and them just being like, no, like I don't do that anymore. And I'm like, okay, like, great. I'm going to go elsewhere. So I went from adventure to SLR to, I think Family Vacation was probably right after that. And Oregon Trail is not a game that I've ever played much of, other than, you know, middle school screwing around like shooting squirrels. And it wasn't the Apple II version that everybody's like, oh, you know, the looks. No, this was like the sepia toned,
yeah,
Macintosh one. Yeah, it's like, ooh. And I hadn't even looked at it in probably 20 years, but I started to like, there was this idea. It was like, oh, what if I just took this idea? And this is a long running theme for me. Most of my ideas, and I'll say it, everybody's ideas are just other people's ideas that have already been had. There's very, sure. You know, once you realize that, then you have room to get creative. You don't have to reinvent the wheel every time. The wheel's already there. You had spokes. You had cool little knob things that are in Mad Max and whatnot. So there was the idea of a travel simulator that you do. You stop at locations. You do stuff. Very like background based, and so Family Vacation started, and I made the mistake after working on it for, you know, several months. Actually, I started working on it after you and I started talking. I'd quit my full time job. We'd moved to Buffalo so I could take this job. It was awful.
At a video store, right?
I know. I was the last salaried manager at Family Video in Northern Indiana, last salaried manager in training. And like weeks after I was shipped off to another state to go run a store, they like, we're like, we're not doing this anymore. We're just going to pay our managers $10 an hour. And we don't really even care if they show up because this place is going down. But I needed a job and I took it, and that was, well, not a mistake. That's life. So I got to Niagara, or we were in Buffalo. I was working in Niagara, which is not a nice town. And working at the video store. I had people, you know, stealing candy from me, like just we had security systems. It was awful.
That's where I met you for the first time, right?
Yes, and that's where I met you. Because so I texted you or I messaged you one day and was like, what do you, you know, I sort of remember how we messaged privately and then we started texting and then this friendship grew and I took the
plunge. I just happened to be in Canada for NES-a-thon, which is right across the border.
Yeah, and you know, I think the person you were with was just coming down to buy cheap beer and then head back up. But that's okay. You know, whatever gets you down there. I mean, how much cheaper can you get with Labatt? But so I took the plunge. I quit my job. Part of this was I knew I'd wanted to publish games. So I had been working with a fellow to do Swords and Runes. Well, he did Swords and Runes. I touched up his English. And then he did Zero to X. And I was like, oh, and with Swords and Runes, he was like, hey, I need a publisher. And I was like, well, there's this other guy. And he gave me a price to tell him. And I was like, no, I'll buy it for that. like, let's do this. I got to figure out how to make boxes. I got to figure out how to do manuals, labels, assemble shells, like, this is all
not only that, didn't you have to learn how to essentially compile it? Like you had to reprogram that whole game, right?
That comes later. Comes like 3 months later. I bought him out from Swords and Runes. I go, you sure? Like I tried to get him to keep stake in it. He didn't want any stake. He was like, you know, if I want to make another fantasy game, I'll just make another one and call it something else. Like, whatever, you take this. Like, okay. And because I'd wanted to, I saw all that stuff in my future for my own games. So it was just as easy to do it all for somebody else's. And he then posted about another project. His name was Nemesis, lowercase. We're all particular.
Sure.
And he was a user on the forums. It's confusing when, what's his username? User. And nice guy. We talked and got to know each other pretty well because I touched up his English for Swords and Runes. Once I had bought out the project, then I was in charge of testing and like coordinating everything. And then I had to actually start building it. And by that time he was done. He gave me the final ROM right around Christmas. And a month or two later, he posted about a game called Zero to X. And I just messaged him right away because, we were still talking every other day or so. And I just messaged him, was like, hey, do you want a publisher for this? He was like, nope, I want to be bought out. And I was like, okay, like same thing as we had before. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, okay. And so I go, but the music was a little, it was sound bad no matter what I say, a little archaic, a little too simplistic. That's pretty tactful. I think so, but you're probably reading into my tones and going, that's not tactful at all. It's a bit abrasive, jarring, rough, simplistic. I don't know. Whatever you want to call it. He did his own music. Oh, it's not good. Okay. Kevin said it, not me. It's actually not bad. I found parts of it charming, but he done his own music for Swords and Runes. So when Zero to X, I said, we're not going to put any music in it. I'm going to find somebody to do music. So you got to leave that like open for me. And he said, okay. And
you went to the man for that, right?
I did. I went to Joe Memblers.
Yoda.
And yes, as Rob would call him. And so I got to talking with Joe because at that point, and this is actually like fast forward several months, go backwards. No, MGC used to be in March. So I think I agreed to take the project Zero to X in February. March rolls around. We go to MGC, we being me, I go to MGC and I meet Joe and Joe and I are, having a good old time at 3 or 4 a.m. And I was like, as we tend to do. just put that on me, as you do. No, I'm usually in bed
before everybody else is at, a convention, one tends to have some fun in the middle of the night drinking.
There's a bathtub
beer in the bathtub,
Yes, the famous beer in the bathtub story. And Nathan always gets it. Tolbert always gets on me for, you guys stay up so late. And it's like, dude, I'm like behind you in bed by like 30 minutes. Like, I don't make it that late. But That night I did, and I got to talking with Joe about, you know, I need a board, because I hadn't been able to get a hold of INL. I'd messaged him a few times, couldn't really get a response, because he had just started his Flashboard deal, and and so Joe then came up with, I go, I just need NROM, like, that's it, because that's all Nemesis wanted to make was NROM games. And Joe, of course, doesn't design an NROM board. He designs this super, like, for the cost, and what it's actually, it was at the time, and probably still is, cheaper than NROM, and does, like, way more. And had flash saving, 512, you know, memory, and a bunch of stuff, extra stuff.
The birth of the goat.
Yeah, GT-ROM Chupacabra was born that night. Took him 3 or 4 months to sort of get it done, which is why Swords and Runes, even though the ROM was finished in December, did not come out until like June or July of 2015. Because we were in Buffalo then. Yeah, that's right. At that point, Joe inserted the music, but I wanted to add further things like flash saving. And so I had to reprogram, I had to convert, Nemesis had built his own, like, custom compiler and thing, you know, his own syntax, everything. I had to take all of that and convert it to NESASM so I could just build it, so then I could make changes to it. It is like this monster process.
Good God.
First, 0x took me, like, at least a month. I don't think it was three. It was, like, 1 month of, like, full-time work on it. And I was able to get Joe's music in, which some of which had been done in like the late 90s, because Joe's been around since the beginning. And as like a 15-year-old doing Nestev.
Incredible.
He is. He's fun. then I added in like flash saving, and he helped me with, you know, all this, but sure. I still had to do all the hard work, the heavy lifting. And so at that point, then, Nemesis was in the middle of developing another game, City's End, which is still not out. And then we didn't do it and then try to find a publisher. I just said, hey, I want to fund whatever the next thing is you're doing. Are you okay with that? And he was like, yeah, sure. Like, this is what I've been looking for. And because I was moving, I didn't have any oversight on that project at all. Like, there were some issues with development and the team, and the final product is great, but nobody can understand how to play it except him. So that's why it's still not out. And it's a very good game. And he admitted he built it for himself. He had fun playing it. But I sent it to, Chris Brand, I think last year. Yeah, it was probably a year ago now. Because he kept asking about it. And I was like, you know what? Why don't you check it out and let me know what you think? And he goes, I have no idea what to do. Like, after like 3 days, I was like, what do you think? He was like, yeah. And I was like, okay. So it needs some work still. I had started to build a tutorial mode. I built sound effects and whatever else. But he did that. And then Swords and Runes 2, which I renumbered as 3. Then he did Swords and Runes 2. And at that point, I had too many games to publish and hadn't actually done any of my own projects because I was so busy trying to create this publishing world that I got a little lost there for a little bit, but also got to pay the bills because I'd quit my job and needed income. And
definitely.
Yeah. So you asked a question like, I don't know, 15 minutes ago, and I don't remember what it was.
I like hearing the life story of Bo's development process. This is nice.
I mean, it is. It's that constant tension between, you know, I got into Nestev for a couple of reasons. And one of them was, you know, I was finishing up my master's and I was learning about all these people doing all these neat things. And with Nestev, it was suddenly a chance to not be a knower, but to be a doer. But the problem was, I was still very interested in what everybody else was doing. And so, like, I have this list from, actually it would have been 2012, because the year hadn't changed at that point, probably December or November of 2012, when I was looking into Nestev. It was just this list of names and of people that would be interesting to write a book about and to look into. And so I've had this constant tension the whole time of knowing about what other people are doing, which led to then the collecting, the playing, the podcast, this book I still need to someday finish, the other book I did finish, which isn't that great, and also then doing, which is, you know, making games. But then to do that, you either have to be really prolific, like a Kevin Hanley or a Vec or whoever else, and just not, I don't want to say churn stuff out because that sounds bad, but you have to, you know, regularly release things.
Mm-hmm.
Or you have to pick up a side gig like publishing, and I did that, and for better or worse, it's
consuming.
It is. And that at some point then I started picking up contract projects and like short things that would just pay the bills. But you know, it's never been lucrative, obviously, not obviously, but anybody who's ever done this goes, yeah, it's not. Yeah. So I had to pay the bills. So I've always had to find other things to do other than my dream projects and whatnot.
All right, well, let's get specific here. When sure. you decide to start a new project, what's the first thing you do?
Oh, man, I want to start a new project so bad. I want that blank text editor sheet. That's what I want.
So you don't copy something over from a previous project? You just start a brand new document?
Man, you're just going to like really like take me to task here. No, I always carry over whatever I did last. Which is, I guess by blank slate, I mean a mostly blank slate.
So you don't have a blank doc. You don't have a document that is bare bones. You copy something over and then go in and delete a bunch of stuff.
You know, I did for a while. I set up a template because I was starting so many new projects at some point. Not always like new projects. Sometimes they were the same project, but I realized I needed to like start from the ground up and like really do things with thinking ahead, not just as I went, like I was talking about with SLR, where I just kept adding stuff and adding stuff and adding stuff. I used to have a template. I don't even know what that would look like these days, because I haven't started a new project from scratch in several years. But I did send Orab Games, Tim, I sent him a blank template, so I'll probably go find that when I need to start a new one. And it's laid out, it's very basic. It has the bare minimum of variables to run through the main game loop, the NMI handler, all that. It's got, usually has Famitone 2 in it from Shiru, which is one of the very few things that I borrow from someone. I write almost 99% all of my code is mine. I don't like go around finding code and dropping it in and whatnot. There's like 5 routines I use from other people, which will probably grow to 10 or 15 as I start to think about it. But it's still pretty pretty basic. And this,
but you don't touch the sound engine stuff. You just,
no, I'm not messing with that. Absolutely. I'd like to, because I need to make some changes to it, because it has certain restrictions I don't want to do. But you know, Shiru did such a great job, and he made it so easy to use and whatnot, and he's a great guy, so might as well use his stuff. Although Doug F. has made some nice changes to it, and Thomas, who I've been using for music for the last probably 6 years, he uses all those, so it just fits. Anyways, so I usually have the sound engine in there, and then I have the bank divisions, because NES ASM has weird bank divisions. And I've got it all laid out, so it's very easy. I know what I'm looking at, like, instantly. Like, it's the stuff that's just there.
Awesome.
That is, I think, an actual quick answer to one of your questions.
So, how do you decide what mapper to use?
I use GT-ROM at this point because it is extremely cheap. I have a bunch of them, so that's useful. I've been using it since 2015. I mean, geez, it's like 7-8 years now I've been using the same mapper. And it does things that... it does not have IRQs, scanline interrupts, but it has things like, I don't know, 8 name tables and 4 CHR pages. And I can think of some uses for like MMC3 stuff, but I sort of like GT ROM, and it has a flash saves too, so like I don't need to go elsewhere. The only problem, it does not have a fixed bank, so I've had to create. I run, and it's not an accurate statement, but I run GT ROM 384. It's a 512 board, but there's no fixed bank, so I forced Joe to make a way to have a fixed bank, which was to have the memory and then duplicate right. that code every single bank. And I then talked with Paul a couple of years ago. He's a great guy for helping out with somebody else's board. He's helped me so many times with GT-ROM when I have like a last minute issue I need to get. It's not his board. He makes no money off of it. He's just a swell dude.
He is so nice.
Oh, this is why I like NestDev. Everybody's just mostly so nice. He kept mentioning, like, if you just cut the size of your fixed bank, you can increase the size of your peer, your non-fixed bank. And I was like, oh. So I cut my fixed bank down from 16 to 8K, and then ended up with, like, GT-ROM 384, a weird bastard child that doesn't really exist because you don't really have to use a fixed bank, but I'm old school and not old school, Nerdy Knights and looking towards the future, I guess.
Yeah. Definitely.
I don't know.
So you
at this point, I don't even know if I'd use a fixed bank, but I am 6 years into the same project and I'm kind of stuck with it. So
yeah, you don't want to have to rewrite all that stuff.
Oh, and I could convert it over to like UNROM 512 and get, you know, a whole bunch of memory back. But and I'll do that if I need to. But right now, I don't know what how much memory I'm going to need for my dream project.
So when you were doing RPG Maker stuff, you were using assets of Final Fantasy and that kind of thing. What were you doing for graphics and what do you use for graphics on the NES?
On the NES, I actually, for a number of years, no, I still do. I use filler. I find whatever is closest in to what I want, to what I see in my head. I go find it in another game. I then rip it. Sometimes Game Boy and NES are easy because, you know, they're 8-bit, but you start pulling Super Nintendo stuff. You have to recolor things. You have to dumb it down to be able to work and fit. Mm-hmm. And I will build my mock-ups that way. I will design games that way. And then bring on an artist later because, you know, I've got stuff in my head that I want to do and I need to be able to communicate that and also make sure that I'm sticking with my vision and not, I want to say not being too, like, influenced or whatever, but now I would actually, I'm open to that more that I now that I've worked with other people about things.
You're getting old and soft, Bo.
I guess. Whatever happened to get off my lawn? That was like an early 30s thing. Now it's like, yeah, come on to my lawn. Let's party.
You had a kid and now you care about people.
No. It's the worst. Well, it's funny. My feelings. You know, feelings. My username is Soul Goose because with NestDev you can do everything yourself. I just don't want to anymore. So it's more like Multi-Goose. it's too late to change the name.
And you said for music, you've been working with Thomas. Is that Human Thomas?
Yeah, Human Thomas. He's done so many things. He's great. You know, I've worked with Joe before. I've worked with...
And I did some music for you once upon a time.
Oh, you used to do music. Yeah. Once upon a time, you did, supposedly, the Spookatron music.
Supposedly.
Yeah, there was a bit of a story there, but I paid the guy his royalties in the end.
We don't need to get into that.
Probably not. All right, what else you got?
So when you are bringing data into your game, do you use binary data to include or do you use assembly data? How do you include data in your game?
Oh, I hate bin files. I hate bin files with a passion.
Bin being binary for the non-programmers listening.
Thank you. The only time, for the most part, I use bin files is... with save data, because it has to be, the flash save data has to be stored a certain way. Other than that, it's all ASM files, or formerly known as CHR files. But I run most of my CHR files through donut compression by Jay Roach, another one of the few routines I use from somebody else, and they get saved as bin files. So I don't have to ever look at them, though. So to me, they're not bin files. They're CHR files that I run through a converter. So when I was making Spookatron, which was so after Family Vacation, then was Spookatron, and I've told that story many times, I had to build my own level editor, and because I'm not a programmer, I only know assembly, I built it on the NES. And that means, you know, I would use a controller and I would build my levels, placing, you know, enemies, enemies, that's it. Because it was Spookatron, that's all that you have. And formations and whatnot. I built it all on the NES, like with an inter-NES editor, which is sort of weird.
It blew my mind, by the way, when you did that.
Honestly, it's the only way I know how to do things, or did. Only at the time, it was the only way I knew how to do things in a somewhat timely manner. And I mean, the first screens, so when somebody built a level, they would then go to the dump screen, which was a full NES screen of coordinates. And I would then have to go through and type up all those coordinates. And then I started making my wife type them up because she's a, I still henpeck at, you know, at this point in my life, I don't actually know how to type, and she's super fast and always proud of it. So it's like, yeah, let's put that to use.
Absolutely.
I think at that time I realized you could put stuff into save data. So I then had, I had to switch to the MMC1, and that dump screen would then just be hex values. And I would then copy and paste, convert it over so it looked like an ASM and fit the syntax and everything. So anyways, I finished that project. I go on to the next, which is going to be my big RPG. I finally decided it was time to do my big RPG. I built another inter-NES editor for that. And that is what I used to build Convention Quest. Convention Quest was built 100% on the NES. And this is where Julius gave me the... it was a Lua script that would... instead of me having to go through the hex values, copy and paste, it would just dump them to a file. I could, and it would like format them all just the way I wanted. He was a man of patience, as he dealt with all my little formatting nuances. Why don't you just do this? No, I want this. I want two spaces, not a tab. Like, I need the two spaces. Otherwise, I will. I can't do it. I can't do it, man. And he was super nice. And
such a good dude.
So I built Convention Quest one room at a time, one CHR file at a time, because the CHR reloaded for every screen, on the NES using his Lua file to dump everything, which made things like, if I wanted to change one tile in a room, I wanted to move a table, because Convention Quest, you walk around a convention, I wanted to move a table over or place an NPC somewhere else. Oh, I built, the editor also had all the sprites were all placed, like I would drag, not drag and drop, but controller over and controller down, mm-hmm. A and B, and drop all my sprites like on the NES. I need to make a video of this someday so people can either be very impressed or very saddened that I was doing things this way.
I think it's impressive.
So I finished Convention Quest, and I got to talking with Tolbert at this point, and he was like...
I love that you call him Tolbert.
I don't know how else you would call him. He's a bear who collects tolls at bridges. We got to talking, and he started talking to me about this program called Tiled. And INL was talking to me about Tiled about the same time, too. And I took a look at it. And Convention Quest, I was laying out the initial work in RPG Maker 2003. This is in 2018 or whatever. Definitely pirated bootleg copy, because they fessed up to it, because then they were like, hey, we know you've all been pirating this for years, but we're finally going to do a legal release. And I was like, oh, cool, here's money, because I've been using this for like 15 years now. Nice. And so I would lay everything out in that, like rough, and then I would go through my editor and like rebuild it and make any, you know, nuanced changes I wanted and whatnot. And so I was using like a map editor at the time. And so Nathan said to check out Tiled. And I was pretty resistant to it because I knew in the end I was still going to have to use my editor for everything. But I used it and I was right. Like, wow, this is like really easy. Like you just like undo things, you can build rooms. Like this is cool. And it was way, way easier than RPG Maker. And he was like, yeah, you should really use this. And I was like, no, because I've got, you know, I've got my editor and I've got my data. My data is already in a certain format. Like I need it in that. And he was like, well, what if I built you some like converters for it? And that was his mistake. Because he's built me several converters now and had to refine them over the years as I've changed things or finished things. But so I now build, like map editor wise, I build stuff in Tiled, and I've then run Nathan's converter to convert the data to the way that I want it to be, the way that I had it set up for my editor. It's just way, like, there was no back button on my editor because I hadn't built it yet, and frankly, probably never would have.
So you're saying it takes what your in NES build kit was exporting, and now you can do that from Tiled, and it produces the same kind of
file? Yeah, it's like, he was like, why do you want it this way? And I'm like, because this is the way that I built my entire RPG engine to work with. Like, I very much, the tools come second for me. Like, I don't get a hammer and look at what a hammer can do. I know what I want to build, and then I go find the tool to do it. Nice. And so, because I feel like tools shape the creative process. They, having worked with RPG Maker for a decade, I firmly believe that, like, you only get out what the tool is going to allow you to get out of it. And the NES only allows you to get out of it what you get out of it and whatever else. But so Nathan was very patient and very kind. And that's sort of the last person I wanted to... This is why I'm telling you this story, is because I wanted to give him some nice credit as being a key person that helped me on my journey.
It's nice to have people willing and able to help you get to where you want to be.
Yeah, and I use Tiled in such a weird, backwards way that he's like, why are you doing it this way? And everybody else would be too, and it's like, because this is how I want it to be. This is what's in my head, and this is the rest of the engine depends on the data being in this format, even though that's now changed like five times, but that's for different reasons. All right, so your next question was...
How often these days do you get to work on your own stuff?
It's up to me. You know, if I do, you know, 12, 13 hours straight of childcare every day, I take care of the house, I take care of the wife's cat, and there's a little bit of bitterness.
It's not your cat, it's the wife's cat.
I got rid of my cat when I realized it wasn't working out, but she got her cat. I'm no longer a cat person, but no,
you're cured.
He's fine. We get along most days. I'm trying to, you know, when you have stuff you want to do in a day and there's stuff you want to get done, you don't always just appreciate the day. And so I've been trying to learn to appreciate the days lately, you know, between the daughter, the cat, my wife. I just try to slow up. And so some days I don't get to work on my project, but that's me. That's me going, you know what, I'm going to do the dishes today and do some vacuuming and fold the laundry and make sure that, you know, the rest of my week or day isn't stressful. And some days I just sit around and I talk with, you know, people online because I need that social interaction that's, you know, not just dada and mama. Or talking to a cat. He hears a lot of things. And so, yeah, but it's always in my mind. I've been working on the same project now for 6 years and... Which is what people warned me about when they were like, yeah, don't do a big project. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to do a big project. I'm not going to listen to you. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing Nestep. I wouldn't be doing anything if I didn't want to do what I wanted to do. Like,
one day you'll have the last laugh.
Yeah,
look, I finished it.
Yeah, hopefully. thanks to Nathan, there are days where I don't have to... My whole goal for the last like 5 years, because we've had a daughter now for a year, was to get my project to the point where I didn't have to do any programming anymore. I had the engine built and I could just do content. Build it.
Yeah.
And so I held off doing a lot of content for that reason. And I went through several different artists and whatnot. And now I have a dedicated artist who's amazing, Super Nate-tendo, Nate Ellers, who's working on BioCreeps, XenoCreeps. He and I are figuring something out with the project almost every day, even if it's not, you know, anything we could show you. We're just talking and goofing off. But yeah, I don't know. I can use Tiled easily. I can just start drawing stuff. I can build a dungeon or map or lay something out or just test something and look at something. But I've also had to do a lot of programming as I now have an artist on board. I'm having to redo a lot of stuff, and it's been, I don't want to say a nightmare, but it's been demoralizing to know that you have to redo your battle system not from the ground up, but pretty close, for the third time. And that's not, it's not even from the ground up, but I used to work like 12 to 14 to 17 hour days of NestDev, like just nonstop all day long. And now to have 45 minutes to try to dive
back in. It's hard to make real progress in that short amount of time.
Yeah, and my battle engine is, quite honestly, that's what I've been doing lately, is like bigger than most games. Like, it's huge. It does a lot of different things. And so to like figure out how to change like one tile, I can spend a whole morning just trying to figure out where I need to find that code. Like, it's slow, and then you're interrupted. You know, I'm always watching the baby monitor. She wakes up early, and it's like, where was I? What am I doing? Oh goodness, yeah. Dinner needs to be done now. Like, but it's okay. I do feel
slowly,
like
slowly but surely.
I get to work on it as much as I sort of want to. I didn't sleep for like 10 months either, which was a weird thing for progress, but I think I'm babbling at this point.
No, you're great. So your main goal, obviously, is to finish this, your dream project. Have you even, you know, began to think about when that's done, you know, what your goals might be?
I mean, the easiest thing, especially based on the amount of time I currently have, is to do a sequel to that project, which I already have roughly written. Like, I know what I want to do. It would require more art, but it would reuse probably 95% of the engine. But I think also offer a completely new experience. You know, Dragon Warrior and Final Fantasy, they built the first game, and they kept building sequels on it. And it was great. Like, Final Fantasy III is so much better than Final Fantasy I. It's one of the two NES RPGs I actually find playable. And I speak for the world when I say these things.
And you're saying they essentially use the same engine and just iterated on top of it?
Yes, they did. They built on it. And so I don't think it's going to be a disappointment if the next game I do is, you know, Swords and Runes 5. Like, we haven't actually talked about what my current project is, have we?
No, we haven't.
Okay. Oh, it is Swords and Runes 4, but I'm talking now about 5, and I've got 6 written too, and probably 7 and 8. Nathan always jokes. He's like, are you working on Swords and Runes 24 now? And it's like, shut up, Nathan. But I do appreciate the ribs. They keep me sharp and keep me focused on doing one game and not 100 games at once.
And you, of course, want to do a sequel to Beyond the Pins, right?
I would absolutely love to do that, which you came all the way up to my place and John did too. And we planned out some of it. I think we'll probably have to redo all the planning, but probably working on another game with the two of you would just be amazing.
That was a fun trip.
That was a fun project. I mean, this is what's hard. Like, I spend 6 years on a project now. Nobody has even seen it. Because I don't want to show it until it's presentable, which is coming in probably the next, don't quote me, but 2 to 4 months.
You heard it here, folks.
And that means if I'm actually showing a project, that means it's hopefully pretty darn close to being done. That means the engine's mostly done, most of the art's done. It's well planned out. But like Beyond the Pins, there, in the years that I've had to take on contract projects and stuff, I can do a project pretty fast. Beyond the Pins was 3 weeks of programming start to finish.
Yeah.
There was the 10 days at your place, which I had to scrap almost all of that once John did the art instead of my failed attempts. And that included fixing your code. Oh, no laughter. You got to laugh. Otherwise I feel bad.
What did you have to fix?
It wasn't fixing. It was making it work within my engine.
Okay.
Because we took.
I wasn't going to correct you, but I didn't remember any fixing needed to happen. But I took it the way you meant it. Like, you just had to essentially make it work with your engine.
You did. Because with Beyond the Pins, I was the one that had to put it all together. So Kevin had his bowling game, and I dropped that into the adventure engine. But the adventure engine had to be built off of what John did for the art. what we three designed as the game. And but yeah, I mean, start to finish, that was 3 weeks, like, done.
It's awesome. It really came together well.
I get down on myself because these projects, my dream projects take so long, but that's partially because they're dream projects. Like, if I finish Swords and Runes 4, that is a lifetime achievement for me. Like, that is doing what I set out to do, as opposed to just doing what I have to do or some learning deal along the way.
And I mean, it's going to be one of the best RPGs on the system, right?
Oh, it'll be the best RPG on the system because there's not, the competition's not that great.
2 to 4 months.
2 to 4 months until you get to see it. Probably another 6 to 9 months until funding.
And then you need to stop. You need to stop throwing out dates. People are going to start holding you to these.
Nah, nobody listens to these things. We know that.
Well, I mean, we've touched on everything I wanted to touch on. You got anything else you want to tell the world?
No, other than working on Swords and Runes 4, which, again, that didn't really start out being my dream, making a sequel to somebody else's game. But when we went out to, when we set out to plan number 2, we left so much on the table and then backpedaled to fit within the time and budget constraints, which became Swords and Runes 3. Those very confused by the numbering, which everyone is.
As long as you know the order.
Oh, I know the order. I live and breathe Swords and Runes. Yes, it's something I work on almost daily. I think about constantly. I feel like I've done less work in the last year, but also thanks to Nate, made more progress content-wise. You can see the game now. I've had to get rid of all the art that was done before by a couple of excellent gentlemen, but it's a big project, and it required a lot more than I sort of thought.
Well, from what I've seen, it's very impressive.
I mean, RPGs are hard. You got overworld, you got exploration, you've got menus, you've got battle systems, you've got bosses, you've got exceptions to everything, you've got title screens, cutscenes.
Let me tell you how easy point-and-click adventures are.
Normally, like when I love the Super Nintendo, as I've said, and growing up, like, I'd watch it and be like, oh, battle system programmer. And then, like, I start NES development, I'm like, oh, no, I'll just do everything. And it's like, that's a bad idea. Yeah, I'm excited to. It's weird, you know, I've done this, the podcast with you, and I've been involved in a lot of projects. I've drawn graphics for projects, I've published projects, I've funded projects, I have programmed a lot of projects, and yet the only thing I can really say that was sort of on my own, my only solo effort, was Spookatron, which most people haven't played and probably never will.
Why do you say that?
Oh, I mean, it's a twin stick shooter, as Nathan called it. It's a simple game. Thanks, Nathan. And it hasn't sold a lot of copies. It's never been very successful or talked about. People know me from.
I feel that everyone that has played it has said it's very good.
I don't think anybody's gotten past like level 4. I once made it to level 49 because I didn't build all the levels. I built the editor so other people could build me levels because I wasn't good at it. And I made it to level 49 one time at a convention. I was just like, oh my goodness, woo! I was just having a blast. People were like, hey man, I want to buy your game. And I was like, I'm playing it right now. I can't talk to you. I'm sorry. I forget who it was. It wasn't E.C. Myers, but somebody else that show came up and talked to me. And I was just like, I don't have time for you right now. I'm so sorry.
That's hilarious.
This is happening. But it's weird because I've been around for a decade and I'm not going to say I've done so much because I haven't. I've clearly been around and yet I've done so little. So it's going to be really nice to finally show people like this is why I've done so little. It's because this is what I've been working on and this is what I really care about. And still no one will buy it or play it, but at least I'll have internally accomplished one of my dream projects. And I've got others. I've got a couple other RPGs I want to make, different settings, different styles. But to get one major project under my belt is that's the goal.
I feel good. Absolutely.
I hope. I mean, everybody I show it to, they're either like, yeah, I don't like RPGs, or like, oh man, this is amazing. And I'm like, okay. All right, we're going to be divided.
I'm not a huge RPG guy, but I am very much looking forward to playing through it. Because you can tell, hearing you talk about it, how much it means to you. I don't know. You can tell it's going to be good.
It's going to be a Super Nintendo game on the NES. You know, fluid, fast, good UI. Things are actually explained, not just left to like, what's this thing do? Also very much, and this was the success that we had with the first Swords and Runes, and Nemesis was just great with this, was that it was a game that non-RPG players liked. They liked exploring. They liked sort of the hands-off approach. It wasn't like this heavy storytelling that they had to, you know, get deeply invested in. It was non-linear. Sorry, my phone's dinging.
No problem. Just ignore that. To calm down.
Yeah. That's the wife. the other wife. Oh, what was I saying? Oh, but non-RPG plays, because there's no menus in the combat system. It's all button presses. It's all fast. It's built for, you know, Final Fantasy had four heroes versus one giant enemy. This is four heroes versus like an overwhelming eight enemies or seven or six. It's all variable. It's all changing. And it's non-linear. I've designed it so that it's playable by, you know, we have a different target audience with NES dev. It's us. It's people that are in their 30s or 40s. We don't have a lot of time. Our attention spans are shot. Yep. It's hard for us to get into things, I think. And a lot of us, maybe our reflexes aren't that great. I've never been good at Ninja Gaiden. but I designed it so that you can just clear one map an evening. The overworld's built like Super Mario World, and in the sense, although it's non-linear, in the sense that like you're clearing single maps at a time. And so even if you only have 20 minutes or 10 to 30 minutes, you're able to still make progress. You can explore a town, you can upgrade your items, go to the next. You can clear out one map, and then, you know, that's it for your night. It's a different focus than these 100-hour RPGs that I just can't bring myself to play anymore.
Well, the way you've explained it, I'm very excited for the day it comes out, and then we can bring you back on here and actually talk about this game in detail, because it sounds like it's going to be great.
As they say with presidencies, four more years.
All right, well, let's wind this down. Yeah. I appreciate you coming on, and thanks for making time. I know how busy you've been.
Callie, it's weird to like be on the other side of the mic, behind the candelabra, as we've mentioned many a time.
Well, hopefully we can do it again soon.
Yeah, I'm glad you're continuing this in some fashion. Because the assembly line reached a lot of people. We got a lot of feedback from it. A lot of people, you know, either were motivated by it, we made some friends through it, gave them something to do, whatever. And so I'm glad that you're able to continue that when I cannot.
Well, it's also super cool to sort of learn about the developers. And, you know, I brought Sergio on, and I'm wanting to bring some artists on just to get to know the people themselves. Like, we focused specifically on projects, and we touched on developers themselves, but getting into the nitty gritty of, you know, where they come from and their process, it's been really interesting. So it's cool that we're getting to do and see different sides of people.
I'll say it, yours might be the first podcast I listen to.
That's what you've said. We'll see if you actually go through with that.
When am I gonna find the time, man? Come on.
You can listen while you're doing dishes. I hope you have a great night, Bo.
Oh, you too, Kevin. It's good talking to you.
All right. See ya. All right. Thanks for sticking around for that full interview. I know it went a little long, but I don't know. Can't get enough of catching up with Bo, hearing him go into detail about the projects he's worked on and the tools he uses and, you know, the people he's met throughout the years. I don't know. I couldn't get enough. So Thanks again to Bo for coming on here, and thanks to you for listening. I haven't mentioned this in a while, but we do have an email address if you want to write in and ask questions. You can reach me at nesassemblyline@gmail.com. I wouldn't mind adding a little segment to this to answer questions, so definitely write in if you want to. Thanks again to The Human Thomas for the intro song. You can always leave a review on Apple Podcasts to let people know whether you like this or not. And we also have a Patreon at patreon.com/NESAssemblyline if you want to show us how much you care about us monetarily. Hosting these podcasts does incur some costs, and that does go directly toward paying for the server that we host them on. You can find Bo on Twitter at SoulGoose. You can find me on Twitter at AtonOfGlaciers. And we will see you next time here on the Assembly Line.